pleasure being here. Thank you very much to the organizers for putting this together. I'm going to be talking about geometric transitions, large and duality, and integrable systems. This is ongoing work with Emmanuel Diaconescu, some parts of it with Antonella Grassi and with Tony Pantev. Bogdan Floria, I think, describes himself as a former participant, former co-author, and then Hoffman and Digraph. So there are various parts of this, which hopefully will appear soon, and they will involve various subsets of these authors. The basic setup is that of a geometric transition. So you have a family, X mu, of complex structures on a Calabi-Yau, and they degenerate at time zero to a singular Calabi-Yau in the family. And we compare that with X, which is a small resolution of X0, which is still a Calabi-Yau, but now it contains some exceptional curves, some spheres, S2. And in a nutshell, large n-duality says that closed strings on the family X mu should correspond to open strings on the resolved Calabi-Yau X. So this is part of a larger picture that involves mirror symmetry. So large n-duality occurs here twice, on the top and on the bottom, and the vertical maps are mirror symmetry. So on the left side, you have the usual mirror symmetry that says that type 2B strings on X mu, which involves period integrals on cycles in X mu, is equivalent to type 2A on the mirror Calabi-Yau Y. So usually you would specify a complex structure on one side and a Kähler structure on the other side. I'm going to suppress the Kähler structures and talk only about the complex structures. That's why it looks like there's a family of X's and a single Y, but there's really a family of the Y's as well. And on the Y side, you get closed string Gromov-Witten invariants. So if you conjugate this mirror symmetry by the large n-duality, it gives you an approach to open string mirror symmetry, or mirror symmetry with brains. So roughly that should take integrals on chains in X, which are not closed. Instead, these are chains that whose boundary is some combination of the vanishing cycles, and that should correspond to open string Gromov-Witten invariants, which are still somewhat nebulous quantities. They're supposed to count holomorphic maps from Riemann surfaces with boundary going to Y, where the boundary of the Riemann surface goes to some special Lagrangian cycle inside Y. The mirror of the exceptional two cycles, which live in X, are going to be special Lagrangian vanishing cycles. So there would be three cycles, LV, in the Y. So the parameters that I wrote down are the complex parameters mu for X, and the complex parameters mu for Y, and I've suppressed the Kähler parameters on both sides. So in favorable situations, this large n-duality interchanges left and it allows you to calculate the number of open Gromov-Witten invariants. So this started with the work of Digraph and Vafa, where they relate the B-model topological strings on local Calabi-Yaus using large n-duality to matrix models that allow them to do some weird computations. So the typical picture of the geometry involved is in the red box. So start on the right side with Z. So this Z is a hypersurface in C4. It's just a quadric. It's a quadric hypersurface. It is fibered over the C line, with coordinate little z, and the map just sends a four-tuple u, v, y, and z, let's say, to the z coordinate. So you just have a family of quadratic surfaces with an ordinary degeneration conifold. We pull this back by some arbitrary map, which will be called W prime. It'll end up being the derivative of a superpotential. That would be great. Yeah, I apologize for the extremely low-tech presentation. I have to confess that I've never used one of these in my life. Oh my God, it really works. I've got to become technologically savvy. So, thank you, Amanda. So we pull back by a map from some other line to the z line, a polynomial map, and then we get x, and we just write down its equation. We simply replace z by w prime of x. So then we get a family of... So now our x is fibered over c sub x, and w is just an arbitrary polynomial, which will become the superpotential. So the x that we get here is a Calabi-Yau threefold, open Calabi-Yau threefold. It is singular at n points because z was singular at one point, namely the origin, and this map has degree n, so the pullback just gives us n points where we have singularity. So here are their equations. And here explicitly is a holomorphic three form that makes it a Calabi-Yau. So this thing depends on the parameter A, n plus 2 parameters, I guess. Just n plus 1, because the zeroth one will disappear in the derivative. So when A is 0, x is singular along an entire curve, namely the entire affine line here. For general values of A, x will be singular only at a finite number of points, namely n. So we have a situation where finitely many singularities go into a curve of singularities. When A is non-zero, you can think of it as if you still have the whole family of exceptional spheres, but it's no longer a family of holomorphic spheres. The spheres are now just topological, but they are varying holomorphically. So you say that you have a transversally holomorphic family. It's holomorphic in the direction of the motion, but each of them separately is non-holomorphic. Being an algebraic geometer myself, I prefer to just think of most of them as having vanished and only n of the continuum of exceptional curves having survived holomorphically. Anyway, the key here is that we want to integrate our three form on the S2s, and that gives me a holomorphic one form omega on the base, which and that is how you recover the classical superpotential W. So, what Dyckhoff and Vafa tell us to do is to combine these superpotential deformations, which I wrote in the previous transparencies, the X sub A's, so those would depend, the parameters there were the coefficients in a superpotential. We combine those with additional smoothing deformations, so let's write those as X sub mu. So we get a new family depending on two parameters, A and mu. So the general equation now looks like minus y squared plus uv plus w prime x squared. That's the equation of the superpotential deformation. And then we add another term, f mu x, and set that equal to 0, where f mu x is an additional polynomial. So it was chosen so that you can complete the square, and by combining these low-order terms plus the square of the w, you can exactly get all monomials up to 2n or whatever. So Dyckhoff and Vafa use matrix model to get a quantized superpotential W, which depends on the A's that we had before, but also on the mu's. And it's a function of a new coordinate x tilde, which is a fuzzy version of the previous x. So it's a multi-valued version of x. So x tilde properly speaking, is a coordinate on the hyperelliptic curve with this equation, y squared. You just drop the uv term from here. So you get y squared equals w prime x squared plus f mu of x. That's a hyperelliptic curve, c tilde, depending on a and mu. It's a double cover of the x line. For each x, you have two y's. So the coefficients of w with respect to some special coordinates on the moduli space give you the open string Gromov with an invariance on the mirror. So this is a very brief outline of what Dyker and Vafa did. So our goal is to, well, we want to do several things. We want to understand the transition and the large N duality in geometric terms. And we will see that the geometry involves the geometry that comes in involves a pair of integrable systems. So I'll spend most of my time trying to explain that. We also want to extend the Dyker-Vafa results in several directions. So we want to, one direction is we want to include compact Calabi-Yau's as well as the open Calabi-Yau's that they're dealing with. The price we pay is that we are able to do it only to zero and first order. When you, in order to go further, you have new phenomena that come in the compact case, which basically come from you have to couple to Kodaira-Spencer theory. So, so that's one direction that we want to extend it. The other direction is that we want to allow the curve of singularities, which in the Dyker-Vafa case was just the affine line. If you compactify that, you can imagine that becoming a sphere, but we want to allow that to be more complicated. We want to allow arbitrary curves of higher genus. And the third ingredient of what we do is we give a physical proof of the genus zero part of large N duality for the models that we are dealing with. So roughly what we find is that the superpotential W lives naturally in an analytic integrable system, and the geometric transition captures a piece of that analytic integrable system, which is given by an algebraic integrable system, and that will be the Hitchin system. So I will try to explain what all this means. Let me just say a few words about the zeroth order part of this. So large N duality and the Gromov-Witten curve counting that you hope for involves an expansion in mu, or rather in special coordinates which are equivalent to mu. So to zeroth order, what it says is in the green box. It says that you take on the x mu's, you take the integrals of the free form on the open chain, and you take the limit as mu goes to zero, and you carefully make sense of this limit, and it becomes the integral on x of the free form on gamma. So here, so gamma is a three chain in x whose boundary is this combination of the exceptional p1s. Gamma zero is its image in x0. We've exactly collapsed the p1s, so this becomes a three cycle now. And gamma mu is going to be the deformation to three cycles in the nearby x mu. So this w is the integral of a form, so it is not really well-defined. It's multivalued. It becomes well-defined if you work modulo periods. That means that W makes natural sense, not as a number, but as a number modulo period. That means you want to live in some torus. So the correct torus here is called the intermediate Jacobian of the Calabi-Yau. So given any manifold X mu, we define its Jacobian to be some odd cohomology group which in this case we'll take to be h3 of x with complex coefficients. Thank you. And you divide by h30 and h21 and by the whole thing with integer coefficient. So if you just do this much, you have a vector space, and this, the integral cohomology gives you a maximal lattice in it, so the quotient is a torus. And I'll give you a couple of examples of this and similar constructions in a minute. Another way of saying it is that topologically it's the same as h3 of x with u1 coefficients. So you take the complex cohomology modulo this Hodge filtration is the same as the real cohomology, just as a vector space, and then I mod out by the integer cohomology. So it's the same as taking cohomology with u1 coefficients, but viewing it as I did originally gives you a complex structure on it. So it's not just a topological torus, it's a topological torus, which is a complex manifold. Thanks. So, that is why at the moment we can only make conclusive statements the first order. Beyond that, that is where the coupling will come in. Okay. So a number of sometimes you get nice theories and it's not clear what an example would be or how many examples there are. Let me start right away by showing you actual examples of these things that we want to look at. So here's a simple compact example of the transition that we're looking at. So we start in P5. We take a quadric and a quartic. That means that Q is given by an equation of degree 2 and R by an equation of degree 4, and we take their intersection. That is going to be the large family, X, A, mu. So the smallest family occurs when both A and mu are 0. So that is going to correspond to the, geometrically, that will correspond to a case where the rank of the quadric is 3. The rank, well, the quadric, you write it as a 6 by 6 symmetric matrix. You just take the rank of that matrix. So that means that the singularities of Q are in codimension 3. They form a plane inside this P5. And that means that the singularities of the Calabi-Yau are going to be the intersection of this plane with the quartic R. So it's going to be a plane quartic curve. So that's a curve C in the plane. And in this particular example, you calculate that the genus of this curve is 3. So it's a highly non-trivial example. Right? Instead of a line of singularities, we have this Riemann surface of genus 3 parameterizing the singularities. The exit, this x has a one-parameter family of p1s. I should have said x tilde. Just X has a one-parameter family of P1. So it has a ruled surface contained in it. Now, the intermediate level is when you take mu to be 0, but A non-zero. So now, the rank of the quadric is allowed to be 4. That means that the singularities are at P1 instead of at P2. So it's just a line in P5. And then the singularities of X are the intersection of this line with the quartic R, so that's just 4 points. So those 4 points correspond to a canonical divisor, so there's some holomorphic differential on the curve C. C is this curve of genus 3. It sits in the plane. Any holomorphic differential is cut out on this plane curve by a line. So 4 points that sit on the line are the zeros of some holomorphic differential. So that's my holomorphic differential A. So to specify the set of possible singular point is the same as specifying a holomorphic differential on this curve. And then the third level is if you allow the rank of Q to be either 5 or 6, which means that the singularities of the quadric are either a point or nothing, and either way, generically, X will have no singularities. It will be non-singular. So we have this three-step filtration or stratification. Here you have a curve of singularities. Here you have four singularities that in the limit go to four points on a line in that curve. And here you have no singularities. So these are the smoothing deformations. These are the superpotential deformations. This is the original thing at time zero. And here it is summarized. The rank can be 3, 4, or 6. If you count the number of parameters for the quadric, you get 14, 17, or 20. You can also calculate the Hodge number, h to 1. You get these various numbers. So that tells you that you found three moduli spaces, which we call rather unimaginatively small, medium, and large. In this case, the small moduli space has dimension 83, the medium one has 86, and the large has 89. The A parameters give you normal directions to the small locus and the medium locus. The mu parameters are normal directions to the medium and the large. And in this particular example, there's three of the A's and three more of the mu's. But don't let that mislead you. In general, the number of mu's has no reason to equal the number of A's. Okay, so forgetting the example, our general setup is that we have an x00, an xa0, and an xa mu, or a small, medium, and large moduli space. Here you have Calabi-Yazo the curve of singularities, Calabi-Yazo the finite number, and smooth Calabi-Yazo. So you have S, M, and L. Actually, there's another moduli space that we should consider, and I'll write that as M tilde, which is the moduli space of the resolution. Right? So a point of M describes a singular deformation, a deformation with a finite number of singularities. So call that X sub A. It has a resolution X tilde sub A, where I've blown up those finite number of points. I've done a small resolution. So given an X tilde, it clearly determines an X. But given an X, there may be a finite number of X tildes. There may be a finite number of different ways of resolving. So M tilde is actually a finite cover of M. It's not isomorphic. Anyway, our claim is that I'm going to have to come back to this transparency to explain the Calabi-Yazo integrable system. So let me talk a little bit about the integrable systems that I'm dealing with here. So there's a bit of a language discontinuity between the physics and the math. An integrable system in mathematics is this. It's a symplectic manifold X together with a fibration over some base B of half the dimension where the fibers are Lagrangian. And you have various options. You can have everything be algebraic, or you can have everything be analytic, and we'll have examples of both of those. So the basic structure is just a symplectic manifold X with a symplectic structure sigma, and everything, in all the examples that I will deal with, everything will be holomorphic and possibly algebraic. So here are the basic examples. Start with X, a compact Riemann surface. Okay? So here's the first example of a Jacobian. Right? X is a compact Riemann surface. Its complex cohomology breaks into holomorphic and anti-holomorphic forms. So you form its Jacobian by taking the first cohomology, divide out the H10, and divide out the lattice of periods. you get an algebraic torus that's called the ordinary Jacobian of the Riemann surface. Do the same thing for a threefold, compact Kähler threefold. The Hodge decomposition of H3 is H3 0 to 1, 1, 2, 0, 3. You take the first half, mod out by it, mod out by the lattice. Now you get a torus. It is still what's called a polarized torus, meaning there's a natural integral, there's a first Chern class, there's a non-trivial line bundle on it, but the line bundle is not ample, so the torus is not algebraic. And this is related to the, well, so for example, in the Calabi-Yau threefold case, the signature of the of this polarization, of the pairing that you have, is Lorentzian. It has a 1 in the holom- in the 3-0 direction and a minus 1 in the in all the other directions. So so that's why it's going to be non-algebraic, exactly because you have a 3-0 form as well as a 2-1 form. So what I'm claiming is that you can put either Jacobians or intermediate Jacobians into families that give you integrable systems. So without going into too much detail, let me just outline the general question. If you give yourself a family of complex tori, for example, coming from a family of Riemann surfaces or a family of Calabi-Yaus, when is the family of the union of all those complex tori, when is there a symplectic structure on it so that the fibration is Lagrangian? So the basic answer is that you're looking for some field of cubics on the base. So if you have this fibration X to B, let's say you identify B as an open subset in some complex vector space, then your complex tori come with a period map. So to each point of the base, above it you have a torus, and that torus has a period matrix, which is a symmetric non-degenerate complex matrix. And then the following are equivalent. There exists a symplectic structure on X such that the fibration is Lagrangian, so that you get an integrable system, if and only if this period map is locally in the base going to be given as the Hessian of a holomorphic function, which would be the prepotential. Or another equivalent way of saying it is that the differential of the period map, which is now a map from the tangent to the base to sim2 of the fiber, so this is the same as V tensor sim2 of V, the way I did it, because I took B to sit inside V dual, so homomorphism from TB are just given by V. So we're in V tensor sim2 V, that decomposes as a representation into sim3 of V plus the hook representation, and the equivalent condition is that the differential of the period map actually lives in the completely symmetric part. So there is a natural field of cubics on the base. So every time you see a field of cubics, that should be your indication that there's an integrable system somewhere above it. So in particular, we have this for the moduli of Calabi-Yaus. Right? So if X is a Calabi-Yau threefold, and M is the moduli space, then the tangent to M is unobstructed by a famous theorem, so it's given by H to 1. I can fatten M a little bit by adding one silly direction for the holomorphic volume form. So let M tilde be a C star bundle over M, which just, so a point of M tilde is just a Calabi-Yau together with a choice of a three-form on it. And then take the universal intermediate Jacobians, so that's the disjoint union over all Calabi-Yaus of their intermediate Jacobians, and throw in this one extra parameter to get the tilde. And the result is that the total space of this is an analytically but non-algebraically integrable system. The fibers are, the intermediate Jacobians are the fibers, and they are Lagrangian subvarieties. And you can go into more details, and you can see that there are other Lagrangian subvarieties there. For example, if you have any family of one cycles, and you construct the Abel-Jacobi map for it, the image will be again isotropic or Lagrangian. So all of this follows from the existence of a of the natural cubic on the base, which is the Yukawa cubic. Right? So if you take three elements in H1 of the tangent bundle, you cup multiply them to H3 wedge 3 of the tangent bundle, you identify that as H3 of the dual of the canonical bundle, and then you multiply by omega squared, and that gives you, that goes to H3 of the canonical bundle, which you then integrate and just get a number. So the Yukawa cubic is a natural field of cubics on this fattened moduli space, right? This last step where I where I multiplied by omega squared, that is where I had to lift to the to the tilde, to the fattening. Otherwise, that wouldn't be defined. Okay, so in fact, we need to know about these Abel-Jacobi maps. So let me just say a few words about them. If you have any family of Calabi-Yau's, for example, over the moduli space, but it can also be just over some subspace of moduli space, and let's say that for each point of the base, you're given some one cycle in the fiber, in the Calabi-Yau. So it's, you can think of it as a holomorphic curve, but you really want some combination of holomorphic curves where the total degree is zero. So it's like brains and anti-brains canceling out. Then we have a well-defined Abel-Jacobi map, or a normal function, which is a map from the base to this space of intermediate Jacobian. So to each point of the base, it assigns a point of the intermediate Jacobian. What is that point? It's integration over gamma b. So gamma b is any three chain in xb whose boundary is this combination of curves, cb. Right? By taking the degree equal to zero, that means that it bounds some three chain. So choose a three chain and integrate over it. Integration over that three chain is a linear function on the third homology, so it lives in the third cohomology. And then you project down modulo the Hodge filtration and the integral part, you get something in the intermediate Jacobian. And the point is that the choice of gamma b, of course, gamma b dependent on some choices. It was an arbitrary choice of a chain with a given boundary. But if you change, you're changing exactly by a period which gets projected out. So the image of this thing in the intermediate Jacobian is exactly well defined and independent of all the choices. And there are various extensions, but I will not go into them here. But basically what I'm saying is that our superpotential will be an instance of these normal functions or Abel-Jacobi maps. Okay, so that was the non-algebraic example, the analytic example. The algebraic examples are many. A way of getting a whole group of them is to start with a complex symplectic surface S and then take any curve, any holomorphic curve or Riemann surface in it, and then the tangent bundle of the surface, when you restrict it to the curve, contains the tangent bundle to the curve and gives you the normal bundle as a quotient. So you get an extension here. And the point is that in a scene, as a scene affinity extension, it's trivial, but as a holomorphic extension, it's non-trivial. So it gives, so this extension gives you an element in this X group, X1 of the normal bundle by the tangent bundle. When you if you compute what that is, you get that that is canonically identified with the dual of global sections of cubic differentials. So that gives you a linear function on the symmetric cube of holomorphic differentials. In other words, it gives us a field of cubics on a base. So the base is just the space of canonical differentials, but the right way to think about it is that it's the deformation space of the curve in the surface. So your base is really going to be the set of all deformations of your curve inside the surface. So it's a complete class or moduli space of curves of some particular type in the symplectic surface. And above each of them, you stick its Jacobian. And this little calculation tells you that there's a natural field of cubics in the base, and therefore the whole thing is an integrable system, which is the Mukai's integrable system, at least in the case where the symplectic surface S was a K3. So that's related to the symplectic structure on moduli spaces of bundles on K3. The example that we will be using here is where the curve is compact, but the surface is not compact. So let B be any curve, or compact Riemann surface, compact, and take the surface S to be its cotangent bundle, the total space of the cotangent bundle. So this is a holomorphic manifold, and it is holomorphically symplectic. For C, the curve C is not going to be B, it's going to be some cover of B, so it's going to be any compact curve contained in the cotangent bundle. So you could take B itself, sitting as the zero section, but for any integer n, you can look at n-sheeted covers of the curve, and those lead to Hitchens integrable system. So there, the base is, again, the set of all C's, all the formations of C, in the surface, which is the cotangent bundle. And if you work it out, you see that's the same as global sections on S of the linear system of C, and you can decompose that into the sum of multi-differentials on B. So it's one forms plus two forms plus three forms up to n forms on the curve. And the fiber over each curve, is, as usual, it's Jacobian. And in this case, Hitchin pointed out that the total space has the interpretation as the moduli space of Higgs bundles. So that means pairs V and phi on B, where V is a rank n vector bundle and phi is a Higgs field. So it's a map from V to itself with values in holomorphic forms. And if I have a minute at the end, I will actually mention some application of some generalizations of the system that involve neuromorphic Higgs bundles. So there you don't have a symplectic form, you have a Poisson structure, which is a slight generalization, and you allow your Higgs field itself to be neuromorphic. So it's an endomorphism with values in neuromorphic one forms on the curve. Other things you can do are you can replace the line bundle by a C star bundle, and that leads to a system due to Sklianin, and there are also connections to calculation of moduli in heterotic theory, which is a story for another day. So just to simplify and summarize, here is my Hitchin system. So I take B to be a curve. G is a reductive group. So for example, that's complexification of a compact group. So for example, we can take G to be SL2. So the compact group will be SU2 and G will be SL2 with complex coefficients. So the total space is going to be a space of Higgs bundles, V and phi, V is a G bundle, phi is, instead of an endomorphism, it's going to be a section of the adjoint bundle of V with one form coefficients. The base is a set of all spectral curves, so now it's going to be a direct sum of global sections of various powers of the canonical bundle. The powers you get are not going to be just the integers 1 through n, which is what we got for an, but rather there will be the degrees of the invariant polynomials for the group G or for its vial group. And in general, the fiber over the class of some spectral cover C is not going to be its Jacobian, but it's going to be a more fancier abelian variety, which is the prim variety of C over B. So roughly, in the case of SLN, which is what we looked at before, you can get the Jacobian of C divided by the Jacobian of B. So if the base is P1, you don't see that, but if the base is allowed to have higher genus, then you do have, then this is the new abelian variety. It's not going to be a Jacobian anymore. There are actually some very subtle points about making this roughly business precise. So there are various tori that occur here that are isogenous to each other. So they are finite covers of each other with finite abelian groups as the cover groups. And those correspond to making the distinction between isogenous groups. So you can take SL2 or you can take SL2 mod plus minus, which we call PGL2. And these will lead to two slightly different versions of the Hitchin system, even in the A1 case. The spectral curves in the simplest case can be written very explicitly by an equation of the form omega squared equals beta. So beta is a quadratic differential on the curve, and omega is a multivalued one differential on the curve. So the fact that basically you're defining a one form omega to be the square root of the quadratic differential that does not have a uniquely defined square root, that gives you the double cover. And this we claim is exactly the same fuzziness that occurs when Dyckhoff and Waffa quantize their system and find a quantum superpotential which is no longer a function of the coordinate on the base, but rather, in their case, it was a function on some hyperelliptic curve which was a cover of that base. So we can summarize our claim by saying that to first order in the compact case and to all orders in the open case, we can decompose the Calabi-Yau integrable system associated to a point in the large moduli space as a product of the Calabi-Yau integrable system associated to the small moduli space and the Hitchin integrable system associated to the curve C parameterizing the singularities and a structure group G which gives the type of the singularities. So in the original Dyckhoff-Waffa picture, the group was of type A1, so it could be SL2 or PGL2. It turns out that we actually need the less intuitive one. It's not SL2, it's PGL2. It's the group of adjoint type that comes in. So again, what does this mean? We have these three moduli spaces. The dimensions are just from the one example that I gave. But in general, you have a large moduli space of Calabi-Yaus. Inside it, you have a stratum consisting of those Calabi-Yaus that have some collection of singularities of a particular type, let's say an ADE type. And then M tilde is the moduli space of the resolutions, which is a finite cover of this M, while S is a much deeper stratum where these singularities are somehow become part of a whole curve of singularities. Okay, so then L is a moduli space. And over it you have its family of Calabi-Yau. So there's a Calabi-Yau integrable system, the first integrable system that I described. Then you also have the corresponding integrable system over S, which would be sort of the tangential behavior. And what Dyckhoff and Waffa suggest is that, or our interpretation of what they say, is you need to look at the difference between the two, the normal directions, And even though each of these integral systems separately was only analytic, the difference between them is captured by this algebraic thing, which is the family of Jacobians or prims, depending on your group G. So, in fact, what we find is a little more. We find that there exists a family of integral systems. The family is parameterized by some parameter, T in the complex numbers, so that when T is not zero, you get the Calabi-Yau integrable system of the large moduli space for all non-values of T. But as T goes to zero, the type of the family jumps, and at T equals zero, you get this product system. And we claim that the entire, basically everything that Dyckhoff and Vafa do can be expressed in this language. So what we can, so here's what we can do. We can prove the statement at a geometric level. We can identify the integral system as a product in the open case or the first order in the compact case. We also have a physical proof of large n-duality for these theories, which involves explicitly doing the quantization, taking the large n limit, and seeing that the Hitchin spectral covers come in a natural way in the large n limit. Unfortunately, I will not be able to say a whole lot about the genuine physical version. I can get it started, but and I should say that at the moment the physical part works for only for SL2 or only for type A1. It's supposed to work for all ADE groups. The geometric version, we know that it works for all ADE groups. We believe that we can actually extend it to all types of singularities in terms of some finite monodromy on some vibration of Dynkin diagrams. And more interestingly, we would like it to work for a situation where you allow the type of the singularities to jump. So you have a curve of singularities, but then you might have another, maybe you have several other curves of singularities, and along the other curves you have other types of singularities, and then where they collide, or at singular points of one of the curves individually, you allow the type of the singularity to jump. So we believe that this very general setup should be modeled by similar integrable systems, and that what we get are particular instances of the Markman neuromorphic version of the Hitchin system, where you allow the Higgs field to acquire singularities exactly at the collisions and at the points where the type of the singularity jumps. But that at the moment is quite speculative, and we can't do it yet. So there's a two-dimensional analog, which is where some of the ideas came from, which is the case that I described before, where S is a K3 surface, so you get this Mukai's integrable system. So S is a K3, and C is a curve, and D is another curve, which is just the same curve with N D brains wrapped on it, with multiplicity N. The Mukai integrable system is the base is the set of all curves of, let's say, homology class N times C, and above each of them you stick the Jacobian of this curve. And the statement there, which is now well known, is that this integrable system for line bounds on the curve D has a natural degeneration to the Hitchin integrable system for the basic curve C, and the group is SLNC, where N is the multiplicity. And this is done by a nilpotent, by degeneration to the normal cone. So Yeah, this is most specific information that you can get out of that statement, but we won't need it. So you take your entire surface S and you put it into a family, which at all non-zero times, the fiber gives you S, and at zero time, it becomes the normal bundle to the curve and the surface, which is the cotangent bundle of the curve itself, because S is symplectic. So this degeneration induces a degeneration of the Mukai systems. This is a family of surfaces degenerating to another surface. All these surfaces are symplectic, so on each of them you have an integrable system. You follow the integrable system to the limit, and you get that here you have the Mukais, and here in the limit you get the Hitchin system. So the geometric idea in our case is basically an extension of this to three dimensions. So it's again a deformation to the normal cone applied to Calabi out threefolds. So we start with our x00, which contains some curve of singularities. And then x is the resolution. It contains a ruled surface of singularities. The normal bundle to f in x is just the canonical bundle of f for similar reasons to what we had before. The canonical differentials on, oops, this C should be sigma. So, this is the relevant part of the picture. We have our three moduli spaces. The normal bundle to S in L we get from this deformation is going to be a sum of sections of powers of the canonical bundle, which is exactly the Hitchin base. The normal bundle of S in the middle space is not quite well defined because of this multiple valuedness and can be singular along S. So you really want to lift here and take the normal bundle to S in the M tilde, which is a Calabi-Yau moduli space. And that has the interpretation that it's the space of canonical space of holomorphic differentials on the curve taken R times, where R is the rank of the group, or more formally, it's tensored with the lattice of weights of the group G. There's a map from the normal bundle in the middle space to the normal bundle in the large space, and this map is nonlinear. The Hitchin base is a set of all-spheric covers. The image is a set of completely reducible covers. So it's those C tildes, which consist of a bunch of CIs shifted. Can I have a light? So we have our curve sigma, and here is the cotangent bundle to sigma. And each holomorphic one-form on the curve gives me a section of the cotangent bundle. So if I choose a set of n one-forms, they give me a singular, reducible Riemann surface inside the cotangent bundle, which is just the union of these shifts, the union of these translates. So these completely reducible curves are the ones that correspond to the superpotential deformations, where mu is zero, and you only have the A's. When you turn on the nu, that exactly means that you allow yourself to smooth out all these intersections, all these corners, and you're looking at a general smooth Riemann surface in the cotangent bundle. That will give you the complete basis of the system. Okay, so let me just toss up a first step in the physical version. So there the language sounds very different. It involves a twisted, shifted version of, graded holomorphic Chern-Simons. So the basic thing you're trying to do is you're trying to wrap in topological brains and anti-brains on the exceptional curves of one of these threefolds in the middle moduli space. So you have a complex Q, which is, in this case, just a two-step complex. There's something in place 0 and something in place 1. What you have in place 0 are the brains, and in place 1 you have the anti-brains. And each of those is represented just by taking structure sheaves of the fibers. So you have N points PA, A from 1 to N. Those are points of the base curve where you wrap your brains. And then there are N more points, Q sub B, where you wrap the anti-brains. Right, so this is a complex that you write down to start a description of the boundary topological B model. And then you write down a big complex of the off-shell string states. So that will involve zero K forms on X tilde with values in homomorphisms from one piece to another of the object Q. So, as Mike taught us, these things live in a natural way in a derived category, and the homomorphism you need, or the endomorphisms you need, are endomorphisms in the derived category. So an explicit way of writing them down would be to take some equivalent complex of locally free sheaves or holomorphic vector bundles, which is a resolution or something that's quasi-isomorphic to this particular complex Q, and then writing the endomorphisms between pieces in this resolution. So we do that explicitly, and we get a model for the string states. But the point is that our total space in the open, so now we're in the open Calabi-Yau situation where we have the ruled surface F, and X tilde can be being a Calabi-Yau can be identified with the total space of the canonical bundle of F. So it's total space of a line bundle. And that allows you to convert bundles on X tilde to data on the compact surface F, and those data will be Higgs bundles. So you get that your complex A can be written as some complex on the surface, which is sometimes F and sometimes S, tensor of the endomorphisms of Q or of the resolution E. And this complex on the base is given by PQ forms. We use the fact that the normal bundle is just canonical differential, so we can identify it with two forms on the fibers. And then, on the surface. So then a P form on the surface and the wedge Q of the normal bundle is identified with a 2Q, P form. So this is the first step of a long and complicated analysis, which you write down a Chern-Simons action for the relevant fields, and you go through a construction due to Bondal-Kapranov, if you're a mathematician, or to Lazarev, if you're a physicist, which involves adding shifts of the vector bundles and then looking at twisted complexes. And yeah, let's. I think I better not get into the details, but at the end of the day, we end up with a superpotential. So we have our moduli space, we have our curved sigma. The space of n brains and n anti-brains is given by the product of sigma with itself, 2n times. And on that, we have a superpotential, W, which is basically going to be the sum, A going from 1 to n, of the integral from PA to QA of the form. If you divide by the symmetric group, so that you go to, actually, the symmetric group cross the symmetric group. You can't mix the brains and the anti-brains, but you think you should be able to mix the brains and to mix the anti-brains. You end up working on the symmetric product of the curve. This W makes perfect sense on that symmetric product, but it has no critical point. It has no vacua. So there's a very strange phenomenon where all the critical points of W come from the difference from the fixed point of the symmetric action. And if you work it out not on the symmetric product but on the Cartesian product, you get that the vacua exactly correspond to the roots of the of your form. So this omega came from some one form alpha in H naught, the canonical bundle of sigma, and the critical points of this W are going to exactly correspond to assigning multiplicities. So you wrap your brains on, let's just call it P1 up to P2G minus 2, which are the zeros of this alpha. So your n, the number of brains, grows to infinity, but the superpotential will have a very constrained set of critical points, which is independent of n. You get to choose multiplicities of the points. So you take your 2G minus 2 points, you break them into two subsets, you assign large multiplicities to the points on each side so that they add up to the same n, and that gives you this picture with a gas of the brains, and then you pretty much formally follow the Dyker-Waffa steps, getting into a matrix model, and you recover their results. So my point has been that there's a rich geometry underlying the Dyker-Waffa picture, and this geometry has to do with understanding very precisely what happens when you move from one locus in the landscape to another, when you go through one of your transitions. Topologically, you just see some one bitty number going down and another going up, but algebraically, you have this entire integrable system occurring right there at the transition, and by calculating carefully with this integrable system, you can write down a lot of useful information, such as Gromov-Witten invariance in good cases. So, thank you.